When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another edition of Sly'sOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and local great sponsors like Madison Computer Works, SNR Remodeling, AMS, the Axley Law Firm, and St. Vincent de Paul. Joining us now, Luke Fuszard, that's F-U-S-Z-A-R-D, in case you're going to look it up, right?
Very good.
I imagine a lot of people have trouble spelling your name, right?
Yes. Most people cannot spell it, pronounce it, or understand it, really, its original origin at all. So, yeah, it's a gift and a curse, Sly. Oh,
all right. Tell us about running for the DNC and a little bit about yourself. I've known you for a few years.
Yep.
You introduced yourself. You were dogged. Right? Would that be the best way to describe you?
I think so. Yeah. No. You and I originally met when I was kind of forming the New Leaders Council here in Madison, which is a local nonprofit that actually now just expanded into Milwaukee, which recruits and trains candidates to run for local office, like school board, county board, et cetera. In fact, we just had David Crowley, was a graduate of our first class, and so he was recently elected to the State Assembly in Milwaukee. So he's a very proud alumnus of the New Leaders Council.
And about to become a dad.
Exactly right. Yeah. And he's a phenomenal individual. Yeah. So recently, with the election of Jason Ray here in Wisconsin as the secretary for the entire Democratic National Committee, what that means is that his at-large seat in Wisconsin is now available. And the way that it works, Sly, is there are typically six people from Wisconsin who are elected to serve on the Democratic National Committee. So the chair and the vice chair of the party, no matter who it is, are automatic members. And then there are four considered at-large seats, and those are split between two men and two women. Normally, those are elected during presidential election years. In fact, we just had those elections in 2016. But with Jason's election, that vacated his seat, hence the special election that's going to be held at the DPW convention on June 3rd.
And this is in Middleton.
Exactly right. At the Marriott Madison West, but technically in Middleton. Correct.
Okay. So I called around, asked a few people what questions I should ask you. And one kind of prevailing question is, what value would you bring to Wisconsin? What skills do you bring to the job? This isn't really about taking a bunch of political positions, right? This is about the nuts and bolts of a party, which frankly, I would never want to do, right? It would bore the hell out of me. So you've got to have a certain amount of patience to want to get in there and deal with the guts of this.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So a lot of folks have asked me, what exactly does the DNC do, or what does a member of the DNC do? And there are a couple of formal responsibilities, one of which is to elect the chair of the DNC, right, and other officers. So we saw that most recently with Tom Perez versus Keith Ellison. There's also folks that are elected to help write the party platform. And then others help select where the national convention is going to be held every four years. But ultimately, it's actually a fairly entrepreneurial role. And what I mean by that is, in order to really kind of stand out and actually do the work, you have to be a self-starter. Because there are some folks on the DNC, fortunately not those in Wisconsin, but across the country, that typically they go to the meetings, which are held three or four times a year, and then they come home, and that's about it. So ultimately, to have a really big impact, you need people there that are going to be motivated to kind of get things moving and form coalitions to get things started.
I was reading about you. Do you really have two degrees from Harvard?
I do indeed. Yes.
I dropped out of UW-Platteville, so we have very similar college careers.
Well, UW-Platteville is known as the Harvard of Southwest Wisconsin.
I didn't even complete that. How about that? No, two degrees from Harvard.
Yeah, I was fortunate to be admitted to a joint degree program that allowed me to study at the business school and at the Kennedy School of Government. So ultimately, after 3 years, I graduated with an MBA and then a master's in public administration, which at that time was fantastic because it was right in the heart of Obama's first election. And as a fun kind of otherworldly moment, no more than maybe 3 weeks after President Obama's first election, Harvard hosted David Plouffe, David Axelrod, Steve Schmidt, and the members of the McCain campaign for a dinner, of which I was fortunate to be.
I've seen clips of that.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So I was sat, and I happened to be seated right next to David Plouffe during that. And so literally 3 weeks after this historic election, he's sitting next to me, and we are chatting about Wisconsin, Indiana, and the other Midwest states. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, this guy just orchestrated arguably the greatest campaign in American history, and he's talking to some schlub from Wisconsin about this. And
a French Catholic kid from Green Bay,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. And so it was just one of those moments. This is like, wow, I can't believe this is happening to me. So it was a phenomenal experience.
Okay, so you have a business background,
exactly,
by
right.
degree.
Exactly right. Okay. Yep. And that's okay. My day job, honestly, is I work in actually the healthcare software industry, and I do stuff like this for fun.
And you don't work for Epic?
I don't.
I didn't think that was possible.
I know. It's funny that, because when I say healthcare software, people are like, oh yeah, you work for Epic. So, it was my first job out of college, phenomenal experience, but ultimately I do work for a company that's actually based out of Salt Lake City, but I work remotely for them right here in Middleton.
You better get to know genealogy. They're very good at that in Salt Lake City.
Yes, they are.
Are you talking about turning this role of DNC member at large into something different than what Jason Ray did? He's obviously very well thought of in party circles.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
What are you talking about doing something different with it?
I think actually Jason is a prime example of the entrepreneurial spirit that I'm talking about, which is when Jason was first elected way back in 2004, I believe he was only 19 years old, and he recognized that there was no formal youth caucus within the broader Democratic National Committee. And so he went out and he started it. And that youth, what's called the Youth Council, is now, I think, couple hundred members, and they have meetings nationwide. And it has really grown into a force of bringing young people into the party. And he's also done a phenomenal job of keeping people up to date of all of the party meetings and happenings, even still now as the DNC secretary. And I think he's a prime example of what a good DNC member should do.
Just so you know, for this, the rules of this program are, so you have to follow the Joe Pesci from My Cousin Vinny pronunciation of youth. It's Ute.
Ute.
Okay?
Excellent.
Okay. So the Ute vote.
The Ute vote. Excellent.
That seems to be a major theme in your run, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many people, Sly, when I go out and I speak with people all over the state, and I've talked to party leaders literally in all 72 counties, and I ask them, what do you think is the biggest challenge facing the Democratic Party in Wisconsin and the Democratic Party nationally? So many of them say, we have to get young people into the party, right? We have to bring young people into roles of leadership within the county party structure, within the congressional district structure, even within the state party itself. And so that has been a big focus of my effort in my run.
In some respects, Barack Obama's election in 2008 and to a lesser extent 2012 was an anomaly. A lot of young people aren't interested in politics, and it's not that they're vapid or don't care about democracy, but they feel like they can't make a change within the political system, that they would rather go work for some sort of charitable.
That's exactly right. Yeah, there's a big move towards social entrepreneurship, right? So a lot of folks figure, hey, I'm going to start my own nonprofit, or I'm going to go and do a year working for AmeriCorps or something along those lines. And so what I'm trying to do as part of my effort in originally forming the Young Democrats and then now running for the DNC is to show them that they can do both, that there's an opportunity not only to go out and quote-unquote change the world through service organizations or nonprofits, but also within the political realm as well, and that their opinions and their thoughts are welcomed within the Democratic Party, and that they have an opportunity to kind of build out their skill set even more as members of the party at large.
Luke Fizard with us at SlysOffice.com. He's running for the Wisconsin DNC member at large. That election will be the first weekend in June in Middleton at the Marriott. Let me play something that you said, introducing yourself to the 8th Congressional District when you were addressing that group. You got incredibly personal.
You see, fighting against long odds is really personal for me. So for as long as I can remember, I've struggled with an addiction to alcohol. And for many years, it cost me friends, fortune, and part of my family. But on my road to recovery, I've met many people who've had a similar struggle as me. And what I've learned is that those who complete that journey versus those who don't have one defining characteristic about them. It's not age, it's not gender, it's not income. It's perseverance. The perseverance to recognize that it's always darkest before the dawn. The perseverance to ask for help when things are just too damn hard to handle on our own. And the perseverance to face the cruelest headwinds and somehow emerge on the other side. And that's the kind of perseverance that we need right now as Democrats.
Why did you tell that story?
The question, similar to the one that you posed, Sly, keeps coming up over and over in terms of why do you want to do this? Why is this important to you? And ultimately, I think what I wanted to be able to demonstrate to people was that we're at a very, very difficult time that requires incredible perseverance and the ability to kind of double down and move forward in when, kind of frankly, times seem very difficult.
I don't hear many people bare their soul when it comes to party politics.
In ultimately, what I wanted to be able to do at the end of this campaign, Sly, is to be able to look back and say, you know what, I ran the campaign that I wanted to run. And I laid it all on the table, and to use every sports cliche you want in terms of laying it all on the field, et cetera. But I wanted to tell people who I am, what I stand for, what I believe, and then they can make their decision based on that. And then hopefully vote for me on June 3rd.
I didn't know that story. You're the all-American boy, right? You went to Harvard and everything, and yet you've still been able to overcome this.
Yes. Yeah, it's, you know, I certainly don't. There are people that overcome bigger obstacles every single day, so I certainly don't want to, you know, build myself up as any sort of a hero or anything along those lines. It's just, you know, an explanation. I think a lot of people, to your point, when they look at my resume in particular, are thinking, oh, how can I possibly relate to this person, right? Or what do we have in common? And I think too often, and part of my message has been, as Democrats, we've looked at people's veneers, their surface, and say, oh, you know what, based on your background or based on kind of where you worship or based on where you live, we can't possibly have anything in common, therefore you must be against me. And part of my effort, part of my outreach is to say, you know what, we need to do is a lot less assuming and a lot more listening to people's stories, and I'm trying to demonstrate that firsthand.
How did people react?
It was interesting because a lot in that speech that you shared in particular, which was the 8th CD speech given up.
Because you went
back
home and made that speech,
right? I did. And as I was walking out of that room, no less than 5 people who I had known through party politics pulled me aside one-on-1, and they said, thank you for sharing that. I, too, am a recovering alcoholic. And it was an incredibly moving moment for them to be able to say that one-on-one. And so it was... one of those moments that I will look back on with great fondness within this campaign as being hopefully allowing others the ability to feel like they've got a comrade or someone who's gone through a similar experience.
You had some tough words for the DNC. Here's what you said. You really truly believe the DNC became a completely out of touch organization that forgot about the grassroots of the party.
Correct.
Didn't that partly happen with, I don't like to pin everything on the Clintons, but the race for money in the 1990s really started ramping up. And to be truthful, Barack Obama certainly accelerated it by blowing off the caps on money and taking the public financing.
I think ultimately what we became nationally as a party was during the Obama administration, we believed that control and power at the top, in particular the White House, was all that mattered. And we neglected a lot of the state legislators, we neglected a lot of the congressional seats, and we neglected a lot of the grassroots, frankly. And ultimately now we're paying the price for that in 2017. And so I think that whether you could pin it on any one individual, I think there were frankly a lot of folks that were behind the kind of drift of the Democratic National Committee, as I like to say it. And so I am heartened by the actions of Secretary Perez and Deputy Chair Ellison, but they've certainly got a lot of work to do ahead of them.
And yet that turned into a fight over the mayorship of Omaha.
Yes.
And ultimately, the Democrat was not successful, this fight over abortion.
Yes.
Nancy Pelosi said she doesn't think there should be a litmus test. Again, I'm not asking you to take positions on issues, mm-hmm. but how do you grow the tent if you have if you start excluding people? Now, it's true. The Liberal Party of Canada mm-hmm. literally says, if you're not pro-choice, mm-hmm. you can't be a member of our caucus. Mm-hmm. You think Democrats should do that?
Personally, I do not think that. That being said, you know, obviously, I think the question right now that we are grappling with is what does it mean to be a Democrat in 2017? As part of this run for the DNC, I've done a lot of research on the history of the Democratic National Committee. And one of the things that I have read about in particular is, you know, Hubert Humphrey in 1948 became very famous for his speech on civil rights, right? Mm-hmm. Walked triumphantly into the bright sunshine of human rights. What's interesting, I've learned, is that the person who actually introduced that civil rights plank into the Democratic Party platform was not Hubert Humphrey himself. It was a DNC member from Wisconsin. And so it was very clear back then that they were putting a stake in the ground of what it meant to be a Democrat in 1948. I think it's similar that we put a stake in the ground in terms of what it means to be a Democrat in 2017, because so many people, even within the broader Democratic Party umbrella, feel like they were asked, you know, how would you define Hillary's message in 2016? They would say maybe stronger together. But then otherwise, if you said, okay, well, what does that mean? They'd have kind of a blank look on their face.
Right.
And we can't get caught like that again.
James Doyle Sr., Leon Feingold, Gaylord Nelson. Those were the people in 1948
exactly.
That put the Democratic Party of Wisconsin together.
Formerly in Green Bay, my hometown.
We'll take a break. Luke Fizard with us. He is running for the DNC from Wisconsin here at SlysOffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
We're back at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at the United Steelworkers. Luke Fizard with us. He is running for the DNC. The whole fight that's still going on, and if you're on Facebook a lot, which I'm on too much, and you know, people warn me, quit getting into fights with people on Facebook. The Bernie-Hillary fight is still going on. And I remember getting into a dispute with someone over the validity of having open primaries. Mm-hmm. Some people don't like open primaries. I happen to think that open primaries are a very good thing. Mm-hmm. But some people say, hey, we're picking a Democrat. Democrats should be picking Democrats. And yet we don't have party registration right. In Wisconsin. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I'm right in line with you in the sense of that we need open primaries. The primary process in Wisconsin, I actually think, is one of going back in 2016, even though there are some of these resentment and ill feelings as a result, if you look at how it was handled, actually, in comparison to many other states, I actually think it was handled fairly well in terms of by people feeling like their voice was heard, et cetera. We didn't have any of the shenanigans that you saw in Nevada and other states. Particularly those that had caucuses. It's interesting because one of the other things that we're thinking about, and this is still very early in the stage, is, you know, ahead of the 2020 primary, doing a vote by mail as part of the Democratic primary in order to try and even get more people to come in
like
as part
Oregon.
Of the process. Exactly right. Exactly right. There's a handful of states that do it now. But yes, I agree, because open primary, similar to the vote by mail process, is we want as many people as possible to be able to participate in the process and feel like their voice was heard.
What do you think about superdelegates?
I have said from day one of this process that the superdelegate process needs to go in particular. So I have thought, and you may know more of this about this slide, I'm trying to think back in terms of when the superdelegates were created, where they were actually influential in the outcome of the race, right? Maybe 84, Mondale versus Gary Hart.
Oh, we had a really messed up situation in 1984 because there was a beauty contest. And there were the one time they did caucuses in Wisconsin, and they were a mess. Now, I supported Mondale.
Mm-hmm.
That ultimately didn't work out real well, although I don't think it was Walter Mondale's fault. But there was a divide in the party.
Yeah.
And no, I don't think superdelegates were a good idea. On the other hand, I bet if you were to ask a lot of Republicans right now that wish they had a superdelegate process, they could have stopped Donald Trump in the You know, is it beyond comprehension that someone that crazy and a psychopath could end up winning primaries and was, you know, around the country on the Democratic side? No. I mean, I think if you could, you could take a look at the George Wallace situation where he was on a real roll because Republicans were messing with us and voting over. And so there are situations where it would come in handy. But overall, it leaves a bad taste in people's mouths.
100%. Yeah, it is. The people, if I like to say as part of my speech, and you probably saw this, is that we call ourselves Democrats because we believe in democracy, right? And the superdelegate process, as it's currently constructed and executed, is so anti-democratic that it is, you know, how some people who can support it wholly still call themselves Democrats with the, you know, a straight face. Actually, it surprises me.
How much time are you? Is this a paid position, by the way?
Good question. It is not. In fact, it is so volunteer that you actually have to pay for your own travel and lodging whenever there is any sort of a Democratic National Committee event, which typically there's about 3 to 4 a year, most of which are in the D.C. area, but sometimes they do regionally. But yes, every time that you go out for a official DNC event, it's coming out of my pocket. So it is not paid in any stretch of the imagination. It is entirely done by folks who really believe that they want to contribute to the future of the party.
Are you doing this because you want to strengthen the DNC, or you're using this as a stepping stone? I think people probably would love to know that, right?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. So for the past year, I've been the chair of the Young Democrats of Wisconsin, as I mentioned. And actually, ironically, my term as chair of that organization ends on the same day as the DNC vote. And so as I was kind of thinking about, okay, how am I going to continue to contribute moving forward? That's right around the time that Jason had his election and this seat opened up. And even before I made any sort of a decision one way or the other, I said, I'm going to call a bunch of the county party chairs that I frankly don't know and just listen to them. And I can't tell you how many folks, Sly, said to me, you know what? You're the first person that's called and asked my opinion about anything as long as I can remember. And I thought to myself, A, I'm honored, but also B, it's kind of sad to that point. And so I kind of surveyed the field. I waited a couple of weeks to see who was going to emerge. And I didn't see anybody else really doing that job of listening. And so I said, you know what? If nobody else is going to do it, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to step forward. And I think ultimately what appeals to me about it is really twofold. Number one is to have the influence at the national level, but also the DNC members and DNC at large members are executive committee members here of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. So they have a dual role where they are in on kind of the ground floor of helping set state strategy and also at the national level as well.
The whole situation that we're in, and you outlined it in your speech, and just the deep, deep trouble that we're in coincides with the decimation of unions.
Yes.
What role do you think unions should play within the Democratic Party?
One of my big frustrations coming out of the Obama administration, and you probably remember this, Sly, is very early on, there was the Employee Free Choice Act. And the union organizations across the country had helped elect not only a Democratic president and a Democratic Senate and a Democratic House, to the point where what was then, you know, the Employee Free Choice Act was available and it ultimately never went anywhere. The Democrats couldn't get their act together. And I thought that was so symbolic of an organization that has for too long taken the votes and the effort of organized labor for granted. So I have union members both within the AFL-CIO, on the AFSCME side, on SEIU that are my family members. And they are good Democrats and they are committed Democrats. But ultimately, they're frustrated because they feel like, again, they poured their blood, sweat, and tears into a party that maybe necessarily hasn't returned the favor. And so a lot of people that I've heard throughout this process say, you know what, labor unions are the past. We need to be thinking about kind of the next generation or what it looks like in the future. And I stop them right there and I say, you know what, the labor unions are not the past. They are very much the present of the Democratic Party. And it's thinking just like that and its comments just like that, that ultimately I feel like has gotten so many folks upset.
Hey, labor unions can give up when bankers stop coalescing
exactly.
And putting coalitions together. together exactly. are lawyers or dentists or anyone else. It's a fundamental American principle.
Exactly right. Yes. And I'm heartened by when I see organizations like Unite Here and others that are coming together and kind of organizing and moving forward. And so I think, we've got to do everything we can as Democrats to make sure that if we have an opportunity to support our brothers and sisters in labor in the future, that we don't drop the ball like we did back in, I think, 2009.
So Congressman Pocan is incredibly bright
yes.
and hard charging. How come there aren't more people that are that hard charging and driven? Where are all these people waiting to grab the bull by the horns? And where's the Bill Proxmire or Russ Feingold at this moment ready to take this opportunity and run with it? Because there is an opportunity. The governor is vulnerable, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Is it just the money?
Honestly, I think that's a big reason why. I've heard of the folks that have kind of considered or dipped their toe in the water that ultimately decided not to, or whose names have been bandied about. I think the money is probably the biggest issue that's holding them back. And it is very unfortunate that that is the state of our democracy right now, where very good people who ultimately I think would make outstanding governors, or even people that would normally want to run for things like assembly and for the state senate, Congress, etc., are taking themselves out of the game because of the money. The sad part about being a Democrat in this day and age is the hardest or the biggest thing that's taking good candidates out of the system is not any sort of opposition research or anything like that. It's people that just simply say, you know what, I don't want to put myself through that process of having to raise money for multiple hours a day, of having to put my family through the kind of personal attacks that normally that they would receive, et cetera. And so it is really sad to see that. And I think that we are maybe not doing as much as we could at the national level to support people and helping them get off the ground to overcome that barrier.
All right. If someone wants to help you become a member of the DNC, how do they go about it?
So the people that are going to ultimately vote on this decision are going to be the same people that are going to vote for the Democratic Party Wisconsin chair and other positions on June 3rd at the DPW State Convention in Middleton. So those are going to be folks who are voting delegates to the state convention.
Which I'm giving up cutting the lawn that morning, yeah, all right, to
excellent.
Be there.
Thank you. And I appreciate that very much, Sly. So typically that's anywhere between 1,200 and about 1,500 folks. So if you have not yet signed up to be a delegate to the state convention, there are a couple of days left. So please contact your county party and ask how many delegates or slots are available. I know here in Dane County, they're completely full, but there is an opportunity to still be an alternate. In the interim, of course, we're looking for volunteers, for people to go out and have conversations with other delegates, etc. And if they're interested in helping out, my Facebook page is just facebook.com/Luke4DNC, Luke, FORDNC.
Luke Fazard, thanks for coming to Sly'sOffice.com.
Always a pleasure, Sly.
Sly'sOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, 5 more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.